and welcome back to another exciting episode of Techsplaining. This is Rob Foster. I'm here with Mark Rackley and Brett Lonsdale. We are missing Stephanie today, but we actually just started recording the podcast, but didn't hit record. So we figured we'd go ahead and just start and continue our conversation. But how are you guys doing today? Everybody healthy?
Are we talking mentally or physically?
Yes. Yes. No, all of the above, right? Because there's a lot of, I noticed Brett coughed. I hope I don't get no coronavirus on me. Seriously, there's a physical component of this, right? But there's also a mental component of this that, I know, Mark, you were in the camp of this is being overhyped by the media for a while and but it's real, right? It's really happening. And, I've kind of been the sky is falling guy, so, in that camp, but in the realization of seeing, watching Europe and watching China, specifically around Italy, which I think is probably the worst per capita, right? Per population in the world right now of how this thing's spreading. But I mean, how are you guys doing mentally and physically? Are you freaking out? Are you cool?
So I'll go first if that's okay, because I'm dealing with a metric crap ton of stuff right now. I'm mostly annoyed by the situation, I think a big part of that might be because where I live geographically, it's not touched us at all. I think if you do a big circle around where I live, the closest you're about 200 miles before you find the case, even an active case at all.
The closest you know about.
The closest you know about. And here's the other thing. We're seeing a big spike in cases because there's been a big spike in testing. Mm. I mean, I'm not going to go. I understand the precautions. I understand the seriousness of it. And I don't want to blow that off at all. So I want to talk about how it's affecting me. And actually how it's affecting me is my conference, because my conference is in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And based upon the president's announcement last night, I've had many attendees call me requesting cancellation today. I've had speakers who are flying internationally who says, no, they can't fly internationally, so they can't be there. So I'm looking at having to postpone my conference. And at this point in the year, because I'm having to cancel or change the date so close to the venue, no matter what I do, I am out of pocket the money for the conference, because if I cancel it, I still have to pay all my fees. If I move it, well, of course, it'll hopefully transfer mostly to those new dates as well. But then I have attendees coming in saying, hey, I want a refund. And I'm like, I'm a nonprofit event. I've already spent the money because my fees were due. So, my choices are I'm going to have to postpone it. I'll be announcing the dates very soon. And hope that most of the attendees are okay with new dates and they don't want to push for refunds. And because if they do, the conference is essentially bankrupt and out of business, because it's not my livelihood. It's a nonprofit event, and it's gone, because I can't absorb all these expenses of people saying, well, no, I want a refund.
It's just, I really feel for you. And also Addis in that situation as well. And, of course his event is not until June, and it's hard to, try to imagine whether we're going to be in a better position or a lot worse position by June. I think it's very hard to predict at the moment. But I think we were just talking about this today, in fact, in our office. And we were talking about the fact that postponing is perhaps the best thing you can do rather than cancelling, because in light of other events that have been cancelled, other events that have been postponed, you can actually go and rearrange your flights and so on. Whereas unless the airline cancels your flight path, you're not going to get that money back. And that's a challenge. Whereas if it's postponed, at least you can reroute and redirect your flight there for a later date, and attendees or speakers aren't going to be out of pocket either. And I think that's, it works for the venue too. The venue, they're still going to get their money. Everybody is in the same situation here, and I think that's the smartest thing that anybody can do, is just postpone it. And cancelling it, it's going to have an impact, not this year, not just this year, but perhaps even next year as well.
Yeah, cancelling is not an option. All right. I mean, if I want to kill the conference, then it's a cancellation. So it's just, I need to get through the next 2 weeks. I think we'll know a lot more in the next 2 weeks. I think you know, the precautions that are being taken now, I hope that means that this doesn't get stretched out. And when in 2 weeks, things will start to just simmer down a bit. We'll see though. I mean, I don't know. Rob's shaking his head. He doesn't agree. He thinks it's going to explode in 2 weeks. And
I don't think, I mean, if you look at the trajectory of what's happening right now, I mean, I don't think we're doing enough to contain it. I don't think we're doing enough. I mean, I think it's going to take a pretty mass shift. 2 weeks is not enough time.
Well, the trajectory is because of the testing, though. It's not because of the actual spread. But I mean, spreading.
We are seeing community spread, specifically like in New York, where they've called in the National Guard. There's a lot of stuff happening in Washington State, outside of Seattle. Our friends in Kirkland were, you know, hope you're okay and hope you're staying safe and stuff. But so I do think it is. I don't know. My wife just sent me a text like, what is going on with the governor? Apparently the governor of Tennessee is getting ready to shut everything down right now. So I think 2 weeks is not enough, but I think we're going to see this over probably the next 3 months. I think it's going to last a minimum of 3 months.
You think?
Possibly going into 6 months. And that's going to cause a massive disruption, right? I think it is going to cause a massive disruption in the way we live our lives. Not technology, not work. I'm talking just the way you go to the store, right? The way you you attend functions. The basketball tournament, right? In the SEC tournament is in Nashville this year. It's been, I don't think it's been canceled yet, but they've limited the audience to basically family members and coaches. You know, so if you've got a kid playing, you go to the tournament. Other than that, you know, 60,000 people have just lost their tickets.
Yeah.
NBA's canceled their season. Is Major League Baseball going to happen? So all these things, right? I mean, all these things are changing the way we. And I'm speaking, sorry, Brett, but I'm speaking from a very American point of view, the way we Americans live our lives, right? If I want to get in my Jeep and drive somewhere, I just go. Now it's completely different, right? I don't know that I would just go do that. We were set to go on a cruise in the next 2 weeks, whatever. So at the end of the month, we were going to be on a Caribbean cruise. And I'll probably bleep this out, but there's no freaking way I would get on a cruise boat. Not because I think I'll get the coronavirus, but if one person gets infected, then the boat will set out in the water just like it did in San Francisco for, you know, until whenever the government lets us dock. Then once we're docked, that's when your timer starts. That's when your 14 days start. So once you set foot on American soil, you're shipped off to a military base for them to watch you for 14 days. And if you don't have it, you can maybe come home. We don't know yet, right? So the disruption there is massive for me in particular. And I don't know. I'm not nervous, and I'm not saying don't, you know, do things, but just be cautious, right? I don't know that washing your hands is going to be good enough. I don't know. I don't think we know. We don't know enough about this thing.
And I think that's the big part. We don't know enough about it. They're being cautious, and I understand all that. And I'm not an expert, and I'm not an MD on it. I read as much as everybody else. So again, my thoughts and my opinions are just that, thoughts and opinions. I think we need more data. We need more time to find out what the truth is. So
What is the consensus? Because I know there's a major disruption with travel now between the U.S. and Europe, maybe not the U.K., but the U.S. and Europe. I don't get to see a lot of European news because they just don't publish it here. But what is the consensus on the announcement that our president made last night? Personally, I think it's huge because we do a lot of trade with Europe. We do a lot of travel between Europe and the U.S. What is the overall vibe there?
I've not heard too many opinions from people, to be honest, since I saw that news this morning. And in fact, your Facebook post was the first place I saw that when I woke up this morning. I think this week has been a big wake-up call for everybody. We've seen the UK Prime Minister really sort of change his tune on the circumstance. Today, within Europe, there's Slovakia has closed its borders to anybody, and they've only got 16 cases so far of the coronavirus in that country. Denmark has followed suit, and so on. So there are countries in Europe doing more lockdown than what the US is doing. They're not just stopping flights coming in. They're closing the borders full stop. You can't get in or out. and they're going to contain it from that point of view. So I don't think we can really have an opinion on what the US is doing when, you know, Europe is having to do this themselves. And I think for the UK, we've been fortunate that we've got a little bit of a stretch of water between ourselves and mainland Europe. And perhaps that's what's helped to contain it more in the UK, because there has been testing within airports when people arrive into the country and so on. But of course, mainland Europe, you can drive freely throughout the country and visit different supermarkets and go to cinemas and all that sort of thing, where it has more chance of spreading.
Yeah, I think Brexit saved you. You can thank Brexit for that.
Brexit or you live on an island thing. I think it's one of those. And I think it's.
I was going more towards the living on the island thing. But
so let's jump into what we really want to talk about, because I don't think we want to like really go into just our opinions about the virus, but the reality of the fact that people are working from home a lot more because of this, because Microsoft sent their employees home for 3 weeks to work from home. And it's causing a lot of people to talk about it and have their opinions about it and such. And I think that we just wanted to talk about that. Why don't we talk about our topic?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the virus was a good intro to our topic. It's somewhat related, right?
It is.
I'm like you guys. I mean, well, maybe not Brett, because I see you're in an office right now. But, Mark and I have worked from home. I've worked from home for probably the last 10 years or so. I mean, it's been, I've been sitting right here in the same spot, doing what I do. There's a ceiling fan behind me. You can see if I move my head, whatever. But, it really is surprising to me. I'm surprised by a couple things. One of the first one is that I'm shocked by technology companies that weren't prepared for a mass work from home. And I love Microsoft. I love my people in Redmond. Love you so much. You do great work. But my goodness, you guys are butts in seats every day. And when the mass hysteria hit, when people had to figure out how to work from home, was really surprising to me, right? I was taken off guard that Microsoft people, not the company, but the people would ask questions like, do we trust our employees to work from home? Do we, what do we do? I'm not going to be able to see anybody. What about real in-person meetings? Just all of this mass influx of questions that I was like, that's not really the way, that's not my reality. That's not the way I work. That's not the way I live. And I work from home. And these guys are developing the tools that we use to work from home. So, and I get it. It's a cultural thing. Right. It's a company cultural thing. And I don't know. I was just taken back by it.
Yeah. And like you, I've worked from home in some aspect of my job since 1995. And it's just been a part of how I work.
Man, was that like a dial up? Did you have like a dial up internet connection?
I had a modem and you could like actually hear the actually, I think I did for a while.
That was probably at least a 28.8K modem, man. That was like old school.
Don't make fun of me.
I had one too.
My Commodore 64 did great in the day. So it's nothing that's new to me. So, I agree with you too about the fact that the company that's creating all the cloud technology, move to the cloud, and they're, they do have pretty strict rules on being in the office. So I think this is, from a standpoint of technology, this is it's as good for technology. It's as good for forcing people to eat the dog food and see, hey, here's how you work remote. It's also going to put them in the situation saying, wow, this is really difficult to do, or this part of the product stinks because I have to now live in it.
Exactly. It's like, oh yeah, I've got to use this now. Crap. Maybe they are right when they tell me this sucks.
Right. Exactly. Filtering for a channel in Teams. It's a pain now, but you know what? It's hopefully now they're going to see that because they have all these tenants they belong to. They have to work from home, and now that it's difficult to find something, they're going to address that in the product. So it's good stuff for the consumer from that standpoint.
I could be way off here. I've projected things that have come true and I've projected things that haven't. This is one thing I believe that's going to fundamentally change the way we live and work universally. Because I think it's going to open the door for more people to work remote, because one of the problems that companies have with having to have a butt in a seat at a particular location, and Mark, you brought this up as well, is that you have to be in that location. Your talent has to be in that location, which is great. There is, you cannot and will not ever be able to replace sitting down in a meeting room with people, drawing on a whiteboard, designing things, and really brainstorming at that level. That's not, you know, we can't do that.
There's online. A whiteboard app for Teams.
There's a whiteboard, there's an app, but still, it's not the same thing of that, that kind of collaborative. But, you know, it's, you have to figure out how to make it work here. And I don't get to see a lot of my team, right? A lot of my, I'm the only one really in Nashville. You know, a lot of my team's in India. They're not even on the same time zone. When I come on, it's already dark there, right? It's already nighttime. And, you know, so we've been working very collaboratively, that way. And I don't think it's going to just impact business as well. So I went to Middle Tennessee State University, is where I went to university at. And it's local here. It's the biggest college in Tennessee. And they're extending their spring break by an extra week, right? So that they can figure out what the best way is to have all the rest of the semester's classes online. So after this 2-week spring break's up, nobody's coming back to campus. So I think it's clearly going to extend into how kids these days, or people that are in university trying to get a degree, experience college, because it's going to be radically different now. Once universities realize that they can do this successfully online, or as successfully online as they can in a seat classroom, what's that going to do? How is that going to change things, right? That experience, because going to university is an experience, right? It's like you said, Mark, when you went, it wasn't really to take your son. It wasn't really about, oh, you're going to major in this, you're an engineering major, you're blah, blah, blah. It was about the experience of being at a university and all of the things that surround that. That's changing right now as we speak. That is changing.
Well, it's going to be interesting because there is so much money involved, and that's where it all comes down to money. And if you're not sending your kid off to school for an experience, how can you, how can you charge $50,000 a semester if there is no experience involved? The economics of it are huge. What's that going to, and I think that's why it's not going to happen. I think because of the economics of it, that as soon as this is over, people are going to come back and go back to where they were, just specifically because of the money that's involved.
What if the students demand it though, right? Because there is a freedom of this. There's a freedom of being able to do this. And by say demand it, there are online universities right now. My wife is going back to get her English as a second language endorsement to be a teacher, right? To teach basically immigrant students how to speak English. And it's all online, right? So what if they demand it? Maybe the universities come on board and say, yep, we're going to offer that, and it's going to be this price, or maybe it's the same price. Who knows? And if they don't, what if they say, you know what? Peace out. I'm going over here to blah, blah, blah university that's online only, and I'm going to get the same degree.
That's the only thing that I think can force it. Of course, you know, with the way everything is legislated these days, maybe the government will step in and say, no, you must offer online courses and legislate that, knowing the way they want to push things on people these days. That could happen too. The consumers would be the ones to push that decision, but we haven't seen historically they really care that much to change their habits. People don't want to change what they do. I'm not optimistic about that. It would be great. Don't you know? I think that'd be great. I'm just not optimistic it's actually going to change the way people work.
Would your son change the experience, trade the experience of college for the convenience of online?
Well, so my son is, he's like me. He doesn't like people. He would do it. He would do it in a heartbeat. He's saying, you know what? He looks at colleges. College is something he has to do for the next 4 years to really start his life. That's how he views college. So if I were to give him the option to, hey, do it all online, he'd be, sign me up. Let's do this right now. So,
wow. I think one of the challenges is when you look at not just college students and university students, but also the younger generation. You know, I've got three younger kids, and we're in a situation where Ireland today, the Republic of Ireland, have closed all of their schools for the foreseeable future. I think until this is all passed and. The knock-on effect of that. So we've got kids that were going to school
And that is forcing parents to have to go and work from home to look after their children. But there, I mean, if you've got a four-year-old like I do and a six-year-old, those kids are going to be disruptive whilst you're trying to work. And what if you also have a profession that requires you to be at your workplace? So maybe you're a nurse, for example. Yeah, we've got the NHS here. we need nurses, we need resources at the hospitals. But if you're a nurse and you're a mum to young kids, then you're completely torn about how you're going to manage both of those lives. And it's that's going to have a huge impact on people as well. So, of course, there's grandparents and things like this that you could possibly call on. But for me personally, you did mention that I'm here in an office today. We do have a small office, unlike yours, Rob. But we're 5 miles down the road. We're fairly rural and so on. There's no public transport or anything like that. So everybody's driving their own cars to get here and everything. And I think the one thing for us is, we've started giving people the option to work from home, and that was actually done several months ago before we heard of the coronavirus or realized how disruptive it's going to be. But I do really miss the engagement with those people when they are working from home. And that engagement is the sort of continual communication throughout the day, not necessarily in a meeting sat around a table with a whiteboard, but just the facial interactions and so on, the camaraderie, if you like, when you're trying to drive business and grow a company. It's that's hard for, I think, a small company to not have that interaction.
So the other really big thing that we see with especially small companies is new employees. You can't just hire a new employee and say, hey, you're going to work remote, unless they're more senior resource. If they're a junior resource especially, they've got to have the mentoring. They've got to learn how to do the job. So work from home is it's not really realistic for, and even for some mindsets. There are some people, if they work from home, they stay distracted and don't do their job. Not because they're bad people, but because they can't function without that accountability. So I think work from home is great. It works well for me, but there are some people and in some situations where it is absolutely not practical or good for the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be challenging for me to work from home with the kids running around. You know, I know they're going to be a big distraction, especially if I'm trying to do a demonstration of, you know, our software or something like that to clients. I'm sure people will understand, but still, it is a big distraction on that part. But I don't hear any drums going on in the background of yours, though, Rob. So the kids must still be in school.
School is in session, and it's very quiet here.
Happy birthday to your son, by the way.
Yeah, he's a teenager.
Yeah.
He's a teenager. Yeah, he's he got grounded last week. Funny story, he got grounded a couple weeks ago got a call from a parent. He was like, your son is sending just like filthy pictures to my son. And I was like, oh no, he's sending naked pictures of himself or whatever. And then I was like, all right, send me the pictures and I'll have a talk with him. And he sent me, it was just a bunch of like suggestive memes. It wasn't even really dirty memes. It was just suggestive memes. I was like, memes? That's all? Anyway, teenagers, it's fun.
Well, even my son's college, University of Arkansas, where there's, I think we have one case in the state that we know of, they're also looking at maybe sending everybody home for the semester and just doing the rest of the year online. And so it's even where there's not any known cases, they're really looking at doing that as well. So it's just, it's an extremely interesting time. And I guess what really tugs at me a lot of this is how much of this is real and how much of it's hysteria. How much of it is because we have the ability to communicate so quickly? How many is because so many of our friends became doctors on Facebook overnight? I mean, I want to know what the truth is.
There are some absolute infectious disease scientists out on the Facebook, man. They are wild. Scientists. I don't know, man. I don't know what to believe. I want to stay off the social media. A lot of the content we're seeing about the cases here is filtered, based on that. So we have to go to sites like Johns Hopkins instead of the CDC to get this stuff. So It really is. You know, I don't know whether it's a big deal or not. It doesn't sound like any of us are in the age bracket of you know, really being in danger of death. It sounds like it's maybe got 1 in 250 people at our age bracket. What I'm afraid of is my parents, right? My parents are older, and you know, their generation of people are really they're in the death zone, right? So I don't like that. I don't want anything bad to happen to them, and that's what scares me. And what I'm afraid of is a lot of these folks that are, you know, these the sky is not falling. You guys are overblowing this stuff. Are the ones that aren't going to take as good a precaution and start spreading this crap to people like my parents. And that's when I'm going to have a problem.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Sorry, that's a diatribe. We probably have to edit that out, but, but it's serious, right? But it's serious. And I think it goes back to the working from home thing, right? Because we want to prevent that. Companies want to prevent that. You know, Tennessee, what my governor was just speaking about of Tennessee just declared a state of emergency here in the state, which is odd because I think we have 9 cases. Maybe that's 9 cases they're telling us about, you know, but, I don't know. It really starts to worry, but my parents live in a very rural area of Tennessee. So they're like you, Mark. They live, you know, 50 miles really from any major city, 65 miles from me. But you know, it's still scary. They still go about town and they go to the store and hang out with their friends and, you know, they see people and do that. So who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Well, a few weeks ago, there was the question about, the first time I'd seen a question about, you know, the summit and whether it should go ahead or not. And my immediate reaction then was, that's a big overreaction. Why would we even consider that? And now my thought process is, God, that is crazy if that had taken place. You're having that many people travel from all over the world to be in one building, potentially, and in some cases, one room. And I think those people that are not on board with it yet are probably going to be on board. You know, when they start to consider what could be the cause, because... Yeah, it is spreading quickly now. We contained it quite well, I think, in the UK initially, compared to a lot of other European countries, and especially when you consider places like Heathrow, you know, how busy that airport is and so on. But now we're seeing the numbers sort of double every couple of days. And I think, we're not far behind Italy. I think we're going to be in that situation in a couple of weeks' time. And certainly anybody that is in that mindset won't be in that mindset in a couple of weeks.
You know, here's the thing, and I'm a math guy, and I've been throwing together spreadsheets and trying to like interpret this shit, you know, and this stuff, and but it's if you look at the overall population, right, of a country, and you say, like, I mean, so the U.S., the U.K. has roughly 60 million people, I think. Mm-hmm. Could be off by, you know, three or four, but the U.S. has 327 million people in the U.S., right? Honestly, we've had how many deaths? Like, I think 20, maybe 30 people have died. I hope we spike to like 300,000 people or 400,000 people and keep 30 deaths or less, yeah, you know, or something like that, because that tells me this thing is actually... maybe it's not as bad as it seems, you know. I hope as we test, the number of people infected goes, I don't want it to go up, but if it does, and then the death rate stays mostly flat,
right,
that's not bad news, right? Mm-hmm. If the trajectory of the death rate goes up, then that's really bad, but I don't think it is. I don't think it's going to be. I hope they go, okay, if people are surviving this thing, maybe they have symptoms, maybe they don't, I don't know, but I hope as we get more testing out there, it does, because... Yeah. Maybe then people will calm down a little bit, because there's a lot of people that still kind of think it's a hoax. I think they've moved away from it's a Democratic hoax, but you know, because that was a thing. You know, that was a thing here in this country.
I was still seeing comments like that last night.
That's Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The demo rats are completely responsible, I think, was the exact wording.
Great. That person's probably spreading the virus as we speak.
Right. There have been 68 deaths in the U.S.
68, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's doubled since last I checked. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, there's a Power BI report with the live data that I look at daily just to kind of see how things are going.
Is that the John Hopkins one, or is that John White one?
I don't know. I don't know who it came from, actually. So, but the other thing, I this whole work from home thing, what I would really love to see out of it is that companies like Microsoft see that this actually works, and then they would allow more remote campuses. Like, why don't we set up a group of people in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas, to come work for us? The salaries can be, you know, 66% of what we're paying people now. So we can save a ton of money. We can give these people in different parts of the country the ability to have these jobs that pay really well. So they can increase their profits while still hiring a great workforce. I would love to see something like that take root because of this work from home initiative, because it's true. It's real. I mean, I live in Arkansas. I've lived in Arkansas most of my life now, and I work very effectively remotely. So it's new.
I'm going to coin a term, and let me see if I can trademark this, but let's just call it nearshoring.
It's actually a term. It's actually a thing.
It's a term. I know, okay. It's a term. I'm just being a prick. So I agree, dude. I agree, because you know what? I think there is more and possibly likely better talent outside of the concept of the confines of Redmond. You know, people like me and you, I don't think I'll ever move to Seattle, largely because the cost of living is so outrageous. I'll have to, what I paid for my house here won't get me like a one bedroom studio.
Right.
In that area, you know, and, you know, it's just not an option for me. And I think I'm hoping that is a good thing that comes out of this, to say, you know what, maybe hiring people and letting people work remotely, no matter where they are, is not a bad thing. Now, but I disagree with you on one point. One point I significantly disagree with you on, and that is salary. Because while I think there probably should be a cost of living adjustment if you live in a city. So if you live in New York, if you live in Chicago, you live in Seattle, you live in Los Angeles, some of our big cities where cost of living is more expensive, I don't think it should be that much than what you would normally pay somebody anyway if they were there, right? I mean, what should that be? I don't think 66% is remotely that, because here's my point. They aren't paying you for where you do your work. They're paying you for the work that you do.
Absolutely.
That's a super important point. And because the last thing I want to do is diminish the value of what we do. And just because you live in Arkansas doesn't mean what you do is less valuable.
Well, I didn't say I was making 66% less. Or, yeah.
No. If Microsoft were to set up a shop in Little Rock or whatever, you know, Fayetteville, and they hire a bunch of people from Arkansas, from University of Arkansas, they come out of school and they start, you know, they build up a little shop there. If let's just say the average starting price for a college graduate is $70,000 a year in Seattle, whatever. I don't think that job is a $45,000 a year job in Fayetteville. I don't. I refuse to believe that.
You know, based upon rent alone, it could. It absolutely could. And that, for that, which for what you just said, and I would say maybe for starting people, maybe they will see a greater percentage change from the smaller areas. But that's the price you pay for getting your foot in the door. Do you want to move to Seattle? Sure, we can pay you a lot more.
Well, there's the reverse of this as well. Don't forget that salaries in the U.S. generally are far higher than what they are in the UK. So we're a UK company having to hire people in the US. And that really doesn't go down well with the people that work in the UK.
Is that a numbers thing or is that an exchange rate thing? Because the number could be higher, but the exchange rate could be near the same, right? And that's what I've noticed with my company the exchange rate causes the number in the UK to be lower. But if you go, this salary, if you go to Google and say, what is XYZ in, you know, US dollars, it's the same number.
No, it's beyond just an exchange rate thing. Yeah, it's the same profession in the US could be triple figure numbers, whereas here you're talking maybe 40, 50 grand
equivalent. Well, we do it better here.
But we don't take 8 weeks of vacation a year, right? I mean, come on.
Well, yeah. So let me ask you that, Brad. That's a great question, though. I mean, is that because of taxes, or is that because what you actually get, does that reflect the taxes that you also have to pay, right? Because ours, considering, is, you know, we don't have a state income tax in Tennessee. I just pay federal income tax, and, you know, I pay. Now, keep in mind, the number that I get does not include health care. So I still have to pay for healthcare, right? So I've got $400 a month or whatever it is, or $500 a month that goes towards healthcare that doesn't come off the, when I look at my paycheck, it's like, oh, you make this. And then it's like, okay, well, here's your healthcare cost. Here's your blah, 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 social security tax. Here's your da-da-da-da-da, which basically means what I got is not this number. It's that number, which might be more in line with what you have to pay.
Yeah.
Possibly. And I think that has changed in the last few years with the cost of healthcare in the US. Obviously, that's increased dramatically. And of course, yeah, we've got the NHS here, which helps towards that, certainly. But yeah, I think generally, still, there's lower salaries for the same profession here in the UK. Plus, we've got a higher cost of living in most cases, yet maybe not Seattle, but... generally, house prices, food prices, fuel prices, and so on are all considerably higher than what they are there. But that, again, it's, you know, just another consideration. It's the reverse of what you were saying. It's a consideration wherever you are in the world. It also goes the other way for us as well, because we hire a lot of developers outside of the UK in Eastern Europe and so on. So, yeah.
So how?
Swings and roundabouts.
So, you know, going back to the working from home thing, how have you seen it change over the years, Rob, since you've been doing it for a while?
The tools are better. You know, the tools are better. And honestly, not really. I mean, it's the same concept, just different tools. It's not that they're better. It's just the same concept, but different tools. I think now specifically, and this is strictly coming from me, now that we have moved to an online offering for collaboration, so SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, all of that stuff, you know, all this stuff required, you know, people in an office maintaining servers in the past, right? We collaborated using SharePoint on premises, and somebody had to maintain those servers, and you had to build the farms and upgrade them and patch them and all that kind of crap. Now that we've moved to more of a collaboration is a commodity, right. So rather than something that's a special offering because our team has the skills to give this to you, it's now a commodity, just like we provide Microsoft Office or email or things like that. It's just another tool that you have to work that doesn't require a lot of effort to get up and going. Now that that's happened, I think what's really been amazing to watch is the amount of people that feel like they can be flexible enough to work it anywhere. Right, to be able to work from home or from the beach or wherever you are. So I think it's changed more from a cultural thing as well. We've always been very progressive in this, but I think the tools becoming more of a commodity to collaborate and more people being willing to step out there and try it and work from home.
Yeah.
Has really changed it. And again, I work in a very unique situation in that the leadership has always trusted us enough to work from home. They don't believe that, you know, you should have to be sitting in your seat. If you want to, absolutely go do that. You need to be around people. That's awesome. If you don't want to, go do that. We trust you. We believe you.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the thing that facilitated people being creative and finding ways, great ways to collaborate.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, since we did bring the subject onto technology, one of the things that you mentioned was, not on this call, but you mentioned it on your social media channels about using video and seeing your coworkers use video a lot more on social media. That, I think, is really important if you are going to be working from home and joining meetings. Because, you know, we're using video right now. And the reason why we're using video is we can give visual cues about when we want to speak and so on. When you've got 50 or so people on a call, it's really difficult to
ask a question or give your opinion, because immediately you go to talk and somebody else is talking over you or something. I don't think the meetings are going to be that effective if you cannot be heard. And even though your voice is heard, it might just be somebody with a bandwidth or a delay issue or something in that meeting that causes mistranslation as to what's being said and so on. And that becomes a lot more obvious if video is used. it makes up the effectiveness of it.
I never thought about it because I never turned my video on. I'm dressed. I'll just for the listeners here, I'm dressed like I'm dressed today. Usually when this is my work clothes. I've got a hat on. It's actually Mark's conference hat.
That's a nice hat.
Ironically, I got in England from Brett. So I've got a black Power BI t-shirt on and I've got workout shorts on and I'm wearing flip-flops. So I'm not dressed for a traditional business meeting, right? So out of respect for that, I never turned my camera on, right? In the past, before all this stuff started happening. Once this stuff started happening, I noticed more and more people started turning their camera on. And funny thing, they're dressed like me. So I started turning mine on as well. And I think that's just seeing people, I think has been a real, I don't know. It's been a nice, refreshing experience for me to just because we've always recorded the podcast and even previously the SharePoint Pod Show where we could see each other. Right. And I think just seeing people you work with, it's been a really refreshing experience for me. I really dig it. I hope this continues forward. It's great.
But actually you raised that point about how we used to do the Pod Show. So back in the days of the SharePoint Pod Show, we had to, because of bandwidth issues, we all had to record our voices locally and then send those files and you had to merge the three files together. Yep. Now, due to just the way the internet technology has come along, we can record that over the cloud software.
I almost like that better because I had specific EQ settings for all three of our voices. So we sounded really good collectively, but some of those shows took 6, 8, 10 hours to mix down. You know, it took a long time to get things right. And, the tools now, like we record with Zoom and we're basically just having a recorded conference call and I strip the audio out of there and we're off to the races. That's good stuff.
Absolutely is. So it looks like Mark's disappeared.
I don't see Mark anymore. I see there he is. Mark got up and walked away as I was laying down some prolific information.
What did I miss?
So what are your thoughts, Mark?
So I actually have found that clients like it when we come on camera to talk to them during some of the meetings. So it gives that face-to-face time. They actually see you. People pay attention better when you're on camera.
Is that your backdrop you use when you're on camera with clients?
Well, so here's the thing. Here's the thing with Teams. Teams allows you to blur the background. So you can actually, if you're not in a very professional setting, you can blur the background, no problem. I have a pullover that's usually sitting right next to my desk, which isn't right now, that's a little more professional. So I can throw the pullover on if I need to. And if I need to jump on camera without notice. So I think being on camera adds that piece of personal contact that you need, and it does make a big difference. So I am a proponent.
Well, you can actually switch out the backdrop as well. So maybe we can all record this with the Vatican or something in the background.
No, man, there's geeky coronavirus in Italy. There's no way that I'm not going there. that's how you get it. Yeah.
Well, I did hear a scary. So I did hear the first scary stat today, and I can only it was in the news, so I'm not sure how true it is. But I did hear that the virus can live in the air for 3 hours and on plastic surfaces for days, and that I find that to be.
I've heard some conflicting ones about the on the surface. I heard 12 hours.
Okay.
See, that's the thing is, I don't think we know. I don't think we know enough about this thing yet to really say. They did announce in the task force doctor for the Trump task force this looking at this said 70 to 150 million Americans could be infected with this before this is over with. And then the government classified all the stuff that dude says. So he's been muzzled. So that's, I guess that might cause some panic. But again, if it's that high and we still have a low death rate, not a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, maybe hopefully they'll have a vaccine here in the next few weeks. Hopefully that'll be the game changer. Well, you don't give me that look. You can't see his look, but he's giving me a look like
he, who is? Oh, Mr. Rupp.
Are you saying with all the money they've diverted towards this that there's no way they can have a vaccine within weeks?
The way they do it now, no freaking way. I don't think there's a way. Just because they're gonna want to test it on humans first, and it's gonna take time. They might have it for rats in the next 2 to 3 weeks. They might have it for rats now, but there's a whole like thing you've got to go through before I'm gonna let anybody put something like that in my body.
I didn't say I was gonna take it.
Man, you can't even get people to come to Branson now.
Yeah, I know, right?
So seriously, about your conference, I am concerned about it. I hope you are okay, you know, because I know that when you put on a conference that big and something that epic, because it is one of the premier independent conferences in the country and in the stuff that we do, you take a lot of financial risk. And I just hope that everything works out here for you, man, because I know that's you do a lot for this. Not because of anything but love of the community, right? And I just hope that you don't have to declare bankruptcy or anything crazy like that, you know?
Yeah, well, and as long as the attendees are understanding and they understand that it's his nonprofit, that they don't say, well, I just don't like those dates, I want a refund. It's like, I'll roll you over for a free ticket next year. You get free registration for the next event. Just, you know, as long as people don't start demanding money, I'll be cool. I'll be able to handle it. And worst case scenario, I did incorporate a nonprofit for the conference. So if worst case scenario, I bankrupt that and I just move on with my life and the conference is gone. So I just, you know, I sent out an announcement to the attendees today. I've had 2 or 3 circle back and say, no, I want a refund. We'll see what happens.
You've got a great opportunity as well, though, with some of the speakers that it's taken out of their hands whether they can actually go and speak at the conference now to maybe still host a session remotely and so on to some of the attendees. You know, I'd be really happy with that as an attendee that, of course, I can't go and attend maybe in person anymore or I don't want to. But if I could still see, having been paying a contribution towards this event, that I can actually see some of the sessions that I wanted to go to virtually, I think that would be fantastic. And I'm sure, a lot of the speakers would be up for doing that.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at, you know, when I move the dates, offering maybe do some live streaming of during the actual conference as well. So for those who don't want to travel.
I'm telling you, man, I think Brett's onto something. I told you this yesterday, but you won't listen. Why don't you do 4 virtual sessions for the people that have just pick 4 speakers. I mean, pick 4 anybody to go, you know, from this time to this time, you're going to see Brett. From this time to this time, you're going to see Mark. From this time to, you know, whatever it may be, just give them something. You know, give them something to say, you know what? Hey, situation's bad. Just want to make sure you have, you know, here's a highlight of some of the content that we were going to talk about, blah, blah, blah. And now what? It can be anything. Who cares? Give them a nugget. I mean, it won't cost anything, I don't think. But I think it's a good idea to do that because we have the tools. If we didn't have the tools and this wasn't easy, sure, you have a point. You have no point.
So I can't just do that. Yeah, that's a good idea. And I'll probably look at doing that, but I can't just do that because I do.
Not at all.
Right.
So I'm not saying don't reschedule it. I'm saying on the date, do something.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that as well. So lots of things still on the table that I've got to figure out. I've just got to get people to calm down so I can freaking take a breath and figure out what that is.
So you heard it here first, virtual conference. Mark said it. I said it. I said it for Mark. Yeah.
And you know, even as a sponsor, I know we're not sponsoring, you don't have to rub that one in, but as an ISV that sponsors events, you know, if you were also given the opportunity to put out a few minutes of a video explaining who you are or something like that that can be played before the start of the sessions. Fantastic. I'll be happy with that.
All right. So you're going to sponsor it. We heard it here. Lightning Tools is sponsoring my virtual conference.
No. Not only that, but let the speakers wear a sponsor t-shirt as well while they're doing the session.
Tattoos.
I ain't going that far.
Okay. Well, you're not committed.
I don't know, man.
Idea.
I don't know, man. I don't want no. I don't know. What was it? Uncooked rice tattoo on me, man.
Too low. That was low.
But your new tattoo is nice, man. It's cool. I dig it.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
It means a lot, you know. Not to me.
I forgot about that tattoo.
Uncooked rice. I will never forget that tattoo.
It's gone. It's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's there. It's there.
On that note, should we wrap things up?
Yeah. Yeah. So love you guys. Hope you don't get it.
Yeah. Stay safe. Wash your hands, you know, keep calm. Everybody, all of our listeners, wash your hands. See you in Branson whenever I postpone it for. And yeah, let's get through this.
Take care, guys.
All right.
Oh, if you have any questions or comments, please email us at info@techsplaining.net. And we will talk to get you again soon. This podcast will go out immediately. I promise.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.